Okay, good morning. Before we start the technical discussions this morning, excuse me, I just wanted to let you all know that this morning we're going to be making a public announcement about the reappointment of four of our members. So I just wanted to acknowledge that before we start the session. So very pleased to say that Carl, Bonnie, Mikhail and Bruce have all been reappointed for a second term. So congratulations, and we look forward to working with you. And a press release will go out later this morning. Okay.
You've got to question that process, Sue.
Long and hard, Bruce, about some.
Don't talk about Bonnie like that. No, it's not fair.
You thought you had a say, Bruce.
Cheers, Bruce.
Okay, so with that, we'll move on to agenda page 10, and am I handing over to Ross?
Thank you. Agenda paper 10. The committee received a query asking if a clearing broker should account for its client clearing arrangements as a principal in a back-to-back trade or as an agent providing clearing services. The submitter's arguments can be found in paragraphs 6 through 15 of the paper. We conducted outreach to better understand current practice. The results of that outreach are documented in paragraphs 18 and 19. I highlight two items of note. No significant diversity was reported. Most entities apply accounting where the result is consistent with view one. Secondly, derivative and clearing arrangements vary globally, depending upon fact patterns, depending upon the transaction being executed and the jurisdiction of and the laws of the clearinghouse in that jurisdiction. Thus, there is difficulty in having a single fact pattern, and this reinforces that any accounting should be based upon the facts and circumstances in the contracts in question. To paraphrase the staff analysis as laid out in paragraphs 20 through 28, the staff viewed this question primarily as one of scoping. If the transactions in question meet the definitions in the financial instruments literature, then the FI recognition, measurement, derecognition, and offsetting requirements would apply. It would be inappropriate to analogize to other standards if those definitions are met. As such, the staff recommend the committee should issue a tentative agenda decision and not add this issue to the agenda. This is because the existing IFRS standards provide a clear and sequential set of requirements. This assertion of clarity is supported by the lack of reported diversity in practice. I'll direct your attention to questions 1 on page 8 and questions 2 and 3 on page 9 to see if the committee agrees with the staff analysis and the recommendations made.
Okay. I agree. Common practice is to recognize the asset and liability are recorded. I'll call it gross. But I think practice is based on a different concept. I think what practice does right now is go through a principal versus agent analysis and has come to the conclusion that the clearing broker is acting as principal. Now, if I get the agenda decision or staff's analysis correct, the staff is rejecting the principal versus agent and saying, well, you don't even get to that because under 39 you go through scope first. There is no, you're in 39 for those that are financial instruments. There is no, other than I take pass-through as a principal versus agent, but that's the only principal versus agent analysis in 39. If you have a contract, you record your asset or liability for that. And I think part of me likes that answer. It greatly simplifies the analysis, but on the other hand, it complicates it for non-financial, because now if I'm a clearing broker, I've got to go through two different analyses for very similar contracts. But I get it under the literature. So I like the analysis. I don't think in the agenda decision we can say that because there is no diversity in practice, the guidance is clear. Because there is no diversity in practice because people have gone through a principal versus agent. So they didn't see the literature as clear. So I think we have to disconnect those. But other than that, I think the staff analysis is on.
Okay. But Bob, you would agree that you wouldn't apply the principal agent analysis in 15.
Not in 15.
That's the question, absolutely, Bob. In the paragraph, one of the things which we talk about, if so, an outlook in 15, I don't think principal agent talks about recognition of asset or liability, but it's more on the revenue side, right?
Exactly. But you're saying you still use principal agent's thinking, but you wouldn't look at necessarily at the words in 15 to apply it.
No, I'm accepting the step analysis that you don't apply. What we did is what I believe what we did today was we applied a principal versus agent concept. Mm-hmm. We looked at risks and rewards, maybe not in strict compliance with 15, but we thought that concept kind of permeates through.
Yeah, okay. I thought that's what you're saying. Limited. I just wanted to make sure that I understood what you said. Okay. Reinhardt.
I also agree with the staff analysis, and I think as is inherent in the staff analysis, if the arrangement is in the scope of IFRS 9, you account for it under IFRS 9, and I think to Bob's point, you need to understand the various terms and conditions to determine exactly what your rights and obligations are from an IFRS 9 perspective. And if you're an IFRS 9, I also agree with the staff's analysis, you don't look to IFRS 15. What I would suggest, though, is perhaps clarifying the agenda decision, because in the first paragraph, we talk about the question that was asked, and we never really answer the question. And so I think it would be helpful to indicate, for example, what practice is. The two points that you made, Ross, what practice predominantly is, but also it depends on the facts and circumstances. So I would suggest adding that to the agenda.
Okay. John.
Yeah, I agree with the staff analysis in the fact pattern. I do think that we need to be careful in how we word it, because I think the fact patterns in the contractual arrangements are different in different jurisdictions and in different situations. I do think it's sort of, the paper is sort of strange, because it sort of looks, it's trying to contrast the principal agent analysis in IFRS 15 with sort of the financial instruments literature, but it seems to me sort of they're not incompatible. I mean, I can be an agent and I can actually have a financial instrument and have a gross receivable and a payable. So even if I was an agent under IFRS 15, it doesn't mean I actually have a net balance sheet. So, and the paper's sort of written as if they're opposite views, but they're not actually opposite views. But I agree with the end point we get to, which is that if we have contractual right to receive cash and contractual obligation to pay to a different counterparty, we have an asset and a liability under IFRS 9, and they get recognized subject to the offsetting, and then are subject to the offsetting requirements in IAS 32. So.
I mean, the fact they needed to be collateralized was quite telling in itself. Tony.
Very similar. I actually thought the principal agent analysis is almost a red herring here.
Yes.
Because what you're looking at is, firstly, is it in the scope of the financial instruments literature? If it is, then you account for it on the financial instruments literature and apply the offsetting guidance. And as John says, I agree, even if I get to being an agent under IS 18 or IFRS 15, that doesn't mean I would offset to financial instruments, financial asset, and the financial liability if I didn't meet the offsetting criteria. So just being an agent isn't enough to get you to a net balance sheet. So I agree with the staff's analysis. I also wondered about the agenda decision. I mean, just thinking about some of those that we looked at yesterday in the world of educative agenda decisions. Whether there is a way of doing something similar with this one. So it's a paragraph A, the committee observed that, starts off talking about what IAS 8 says about similar items. And I'm not sure we need to go near IAS 8 in this case, because we are straight into the financial instruments guidance.
Yeah.
So I just wondered if we could be maybe more positive and just thinking about some of those we talked about yesterday and explaining this using the same sort of format.
Happy to, Jenny.
Okay. Yeah.
You have volunteered yourself on the drafting.
No one lets me draft financial instruments.
I'm not going there.
I'll come back on another question in a second. First, Young Sir.
Oh, yes. My opinion is the same as all the others I grew up with, the staff analysis and conclusion. But when I read the, you know, the agenda, draft agenda decision, it's a kind of odd to me because, you know, the question was about whether a financial institution is a principal or an agent. But in the answer, there's no remarks about whether they have to think about principal or agent. And also, you don't mention anything about IFRS 15 or anything like that. So that when I read the staff paper, I clearly understand what you're trying to say. When I read the agenda paper, I really don't
see that. I appreciate that, Young Sir, and I think it comes back to Tony's point, because the principal agent and the 15 is a complete red herring out here. It is not something that is there, and one of the reasons why we had to do it is because the way the question came up, and absolutely all the comments are valid which have been made, and that's the thing. And we will try and take care of it in when we redraft the agenda decision and how we go through, because it is a red herring.
Well, which is maybe only to say, as I say, we will redraft as... thinking about it, Kumar, I might be slightly nervous about even mentioning IFRS 15 or IAS 18 in the agenda decision, because it almost makes people think, well, should I go there? And it might possibly be cleaner just to talk.
But to Tony's point, it would be good probably just to point straight to the FI literature.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I think it would be good somehow to acknowledge the point that Bob started with, which is there is a place for principal agent thinking in FI, because the easy example for me is I hold bonds as nominee for somebody on the legal name, but that's all. So we definitely have that concept, but I wouldn't be searching through 15 to analyse it. Andrew.
Thanks. I also agree with where the staff have got to. Just a couple of thoughts on the agenda decision itself. I wondered whether subparagraph A was necessary at all, because without that you would go straight into the FI. So we've all already been there. On existing subparagraph C, I wondered whether it might be worth adding something to say that you don't apply other standards by analogy to this, so that there's an explicit exclusion of applying something by analogy, because I agree with others that there's a bit of a risk here that people might try to go into 18 or 15, and that's not where they should go. And so I think we ought to say that they don't. And then at the end of subparagraph C, we could even add that principal agent analysis is not relevant to this, because it just isn't. And that then directs people a little bit more clearly. The only other thought I had in subparagraph D was I wondered whether there would be any circumstances where, when something doesn't meet the definition of a financial instrument, there might be an accounting standard that is directly applicable. And perhaps we refer to that first, and then if there isn't one, then you go to the hierarchy.
All right, so subject to the drafting comments that have been made, make sure I ask the right question. Does the committee agree with proceeding with a educative agenda decision? Yeah. I could get a show of hands.
All in favour?
Everybody, I think.
Great.
Yeah. And what I will suggest is the staff will redraft and will liaise with a couple of people just to specifically make sure we've captured points that have been raised. Right.